From the Lean Enterprise Institute in Boston, this is the WLEI podcast, where we share stories of people making the world better through lean thinking and practice. For more information about LEI, including how we can help you apply lean thinking, please visit lean.org.
Welcome to the WLEI podcast. I'm your host, Matt Savas, and today I'm speaking with Alan Goodman. Alan spent his career at GE, and he's currently the Department Chair of Quality Engineering at Milwaukee Area Technical College. During COVID, Alan decided to open up an online school to teach kids lean basics and problem-solving fundamentals. What started as a one-off thing has since expanded to a year-round program that he runs locally in Milwaukee. And it's all about creating a next generation of lean thinkers and preparing them for their careers beyond school. So that's what we're going to be talking about. Alan was gracious enough to join us at the Lean Summit as a speaker to share about this program. And we recorded at the summit, so the audio quality isn't perfect, so please excuse that. But Alan's got a great program running. And if you would like to support it, we've posted some links in the show notes. And with that, let's get started.
Hi, Alan. Welcome to the podcast. Thanks for joining me here today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
We always start off these things by just inviting our guests to introduce themselves, provide a little bit of background. So we'll start there. Could you share a little bit about your history, your career, Alan, and maybe also how you were introduced to lean thinking?
Yeah, so I'm originally from Philadelphia, live in Milwaukee now. I am a college professor and department chair for Milwaukee Area Technical College. I lead the quality engineering department, and I teach all the lean and lean Six Sigma classes. Also, I wear a couple of hats, so I also have a dessert business, Goodman's Desserts, and then I do some consulting as well, lean consulting with K-12 schools, as well as some companies. So I keep pretty busy. My lean background comes from my time at GE. I spent 9 years there as a Six Sigma Black Belt, and then learning lean there, and then just applied it everywhere else that I've been. So, it's been a valuable skill for me. Whenever there's a problem in a company that I worked at, the way to figure it out, they were following me to do it. And so that's how I knew that it's a valuable skill to have and that not many people have it.
Yeah, so we're actually in Carlsbad for LEI's conference, Lean Summit. You're going to be one of our learning session speakers, and you're going to be talking about, I guess, really how to develop people like yourself. Mm-hmm. So you have a wonderful program that engages students. At first during the summer, but I just learned that it sounds like you're trying to pull this off throughout the year. We'll talk about that later. Mm-hmm. And that's what you're going to talk to our community about here at the conference, mm-hmm. this summer program that you've developed. Let's start there. So can you just introduce to us what this program is and the inspiration behind it?
Yeah, so when I started talking to companies, when I took over this program at MATC, this is year six. Whenever I would talk to companies, they would always say that they had plenty of people who could come in and do the job they wanted, but they didn't really have anybody who could solve problems. Mm-hmm. And they're always looking for that. Every time there's a career fair, they're looking for people with lean background. They don't even care like what their degree is in. They're like, do they have lean training? Because they can teach somebody how to do a job. It's you can't. It takes more to turn on that kind of that problem-solving mindset. Mm. And that's what companies are still missing even until today. And so my thought was, being involved with Junior Achievement years ago, I liked the way they packed up the curriculum and they went and taught the lessons from all the way from kindergarten all the way up through high school. And so I thought, why not do that with Lean so that we could prepare our students before they get to college, before they get to industry, and that they're already thinking about solving problems, being strategic, critical thinking, all those things that are important. We're gonna need that because these kids are gonna be, leading our country. And so we need more problem solving. I think we saw that through COVID and some other things we've been through that, we need more people who think creatively and can get to some solutions. And so the initial thought was, well, we'll just try this for a summer. And so during the pandemic, we had virtual summer camps. And so there was one day, I was on the fifth day of like some kind of security, cybersecurity camp. They put Lean in on the fifth day. It's like 3 hours. Yeah. And so they're like, well, we'll put it in there, just kind of piggyback on it. We got some students already. And it went very well. We had 15 students who were there. They loved it. We partnered with Morris Team on some of their simulations and games. And so the kids loved it. Got really good feedback. So the next year we decided to do a full week. It was still we were kind of getting off of the pandemic, but we're still virtual and a little in person. But the thing that was really inspiring about that one was that we had 15 kids again. We had 4 children from Illinois, one from the Philippines. And she, I think it was a 12-hour difference. So we're on at like 9 o'clock a.m. She's on 9 o'clock p.m. And I didn't realize that until I asked her. I said, hey, well, you know, did your parents get the login for whatever? And she's like, well, I would ask them, but they're asleep.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, well, I said, wow, they're sleeping kind of early. She's like, well, no, it's 9 o'clock here at 9 p.m. And I'm like, wow. And she, you know, it was 3 hours a day for 5 days. And so I challenged them to implement improvements in things around the house by Friday. The chalet from the Philippines, despite being virtual this whole time, she had what was called a book of hacks. And actually, in the presentation tomorrow, I'm gonna show the video where she made 4 or 5 improvements in her home just based off of what we discussed in the 4 days. And it just clicked with me that if children can learn these basic concepts in 12 hours, that we need to get to the schools, we need to get this to students earlier. And let them really develop and learn the skill.
And how old are the kids who are participating in this?
8th and 9th graders. At that particular time. I've had one, 2 seniors, but typically like between 8 and 10.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw that book of hacks at the AME conference last year. Mm-hmm. And I think I remember one about, was it laundry?
Yeah. So she was doing laundry and it had been kind of the way it was stacked, like you couldn't really tell like what color each right. It was like a towel. She couldn't tell what color. And so she adjusted it so that it was sitting kind of upright.
Oh, the orientation.
Yeah, the orientation. So now you can pull a specific color that you want.
Yeah, I remember being very impressed by that, to think, yeah, it's I guess an 8th or 9th grader.
Yeah, she was 8th grader.
Yeah. Well, what was really neat about it was how quickly the participants were, I mean, like you said, the program is only 5 days. Mm-hmm. And so there's very little time to actually do much instruction.
Sure.
And yet you're getting them to actually start making small improvements inside of their inside their home and just kind of get the basic thinking flowing.
Mm-hmm.
What are the concepts that you're instructing them on? Is it like basic stuff like the 7 wastes, or what are the sorts of things that you're teaching?
Yeah, we talked about the waste. We talked about non-value added activities,
okay,
process mapping. But then, you know, we start to get into more, you know, like standard work. We started getting into some graphing. We got into variation. And so we started out thinking that, well, we'll just stay pretty basic. But at each day went along, we're like, well, you know, let's add a little something else. You know, let's talk about value stream mapping. Let's talk about some of these other things. And they picked up on them. And so that was the other learning, is that they can handle more than we thought.
Well, that's what's your experience working with these students versus working with adults in not necessarily your career, if you've instructed adults before, but I get the sense that, you know, kids are probably maybe a little bit freer to explore these ideas and be a little bit more creative. That just seems to be the nature of kids versus adults. But do you see that? And also, do you think there are opportunities to take some of the lessons you've learned instructing kids and migrate some of this stuff to like things people could do inside of organizations?
Yeah, and actually they're very similar. the things that I do. So I do like this thing, a tennis ball game that I've seen online, but I make my own variation of it. Students can, you're transferring tennis balls from one bucket to another bucket, and you have some rules, and typically the kids get it done quicker. Kids, they usually pilot. So they'll try a couple
Try
things
something
first.
quickly,
Yeah,
they
absolutely.
settle on.
So kind of get in a group and discuss it.
Yeah.
And they usually come up with the fastest way a lot quicker than adults. Now, everybody has fun doing the exercise, which is why I do it with both. But the adults, it's more of the corporate battle scars and something degree or of making mistakes and that sort of thing. And so nobody wants to make a mistake, or everybody wants to lead, how we're figured out how we're going to do this. And so with kids, they're just kind of like, all right, let's just brainstorm, let's throw some ideas out, let's try this, let's try that. Okay, yep. And their ideas are pretty wide and broad, where adults, it takes them longer to get there, because they're kind of fixed on, oh, you know what, I know how to do this. And somebody else is like, I know how to do it. And based on their experience or whatever, we're children, you think about even children as young as like 3 or 4, like they'll watch, a Marvel movie or a cartoon, and they're like, oh, I can fly. And you have to tell them that they can't fly, right? Because but they so their creativity is so wide that there's no wrong answer.
I went rock climbing at a gym for the first time a couple of weeks ago,
Oh, bless you.
and I was with my wife, but we were on the children's wall because we were being trained on how to do the belay to safely work a rope with a partner. And there were kids. I swear, none of these kids were older than 5. They were like between 4, I'm going to say 4 and 5 years old. And they were climbing this 20, 25-foot wall with zero fear and incredible speed. It was astonishing.
Absolutely.
But I guess, I don't know, it must be something developmental where kids actually, maybe they don't develop a sense of fear or something until, I don't know, they reach the age of 7 or 8 or something like this. But yeah, it was staggering.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
I think you learn fear through experiences, right? And so the more you have experiences failing or being fearful of something, then it's like then you develop that scar tissue, I'll say. And I think that's what stunts to a certain degree as you get older, it kind of stunts your growth, the way you think, your creativity. Because you're like, oh, well, I've already tried it. That's not going to work. Like, well, maybe it'll work here. Like, for example, the spaghetti tower, which has been around for a while.
Spaghetti tower.
So it's you take spaghetti, a marshmallow, some string and tape, and you instruct the group to build the tallest tower they can build.
Okay.
That's freestanding, meaning that you can't hold it up, like it's got to stand on its own. Children build taller towers, what they do is, the adults kind of get stuck on a specific structure, and when it doesn't work, then they try to tweak it.
Yeah.
Children will look at, they'll build a structure, it doesn't work, they'll scrap the whole thing and they'll start over again.
Yeah.
And so that's been something where I do with my college students, but I do it with kids, and they just consistently build the towers higher.
Yeah, so the camp, it started out as a 1 day activity as part of the cybersecurity camp, and then the following year it evolved into a 5 day activity. Where do things stand now, and are you planning to grow it, or what's the plan?
Yeah, so in subsequent years we've had it. We've had the camp. We had slightly less children because what I found is that having it at the college was well, plus and a minus, right? So it's a space, a central location. That's great. But we also made the assumption that kids could make their way down there.
Okay, so the camp, it's no longer virtual. Now it's
So
being
now it's in
in
person.
person.
Yeah, it's in
Kind of a
person.
little bit has
Yeah.
been, yeah. Okay.
So when we transitioned to that, we made the assumption that kids would just be able to come down there for camps, other kids come down there for camps. That's not necessarily the case. And so I bought this idea to this group called City on the Hill. nonprofit. They do things in the community. They had a youth entrepreneurship program. And so it was a good end for me as an entrepreneur, but also to be able to teach operational excellence, because I do consult with small businesses to work with them on their operations. Mm-hmm. And so this was a good end to do that. And so once we started doing that, we've had five of those camps. I mean, we've had as many as 25 students show up and participate in the camp. So
are all those camps 5 days long, or how do those work?
So the ones we do at City on a Hill are normally, they're normally 3 hours, and they're either in a community center or at an actual school.
Okay.
And so we started doing it that way, sort of as an after school activity. So it's been interesting because I've been able to fit in a lot of concepts within the 3 hours.
Okay.
And we're able to, one of my part-time instructors coined this term, nerd vibes. And she's
nerd
like,
vibes?
Nerd vibes, yeah. And so we're working with the kids, and we could tell which ones really have taken to this.
Got it.
And so, the plan in the future plan would be to take those kids and give them a more intensive training as part of a pipeline. What we've noticed is taking out into the community and schools directly. Now we're able to get more children in the program, and more young ladies are in the program. It's probably about 50-50, maybe slightly more young ladies participating, which is really good for a program that at the college sits under the STEM pathway.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. So you have these. So each one is three. It's a 3 hour instance where kids are participating. And you said like a group of 20, 25 kids. Or
something. We've had as many as 20, 25. It just depends on the school and how well they market. Because that's another part of this. How well it's marketed.
Build awareness.
Yeah. Like the name of the camp is called Lean, How to Do Everything Better. And so for parents that are lean professionals, they're like, oh, yeah, my kid's got to be there. But if you're not, then it's kind of like, that may be interesting, maybe not. Now, the camps are free, which I also think could be a hindrance, because free is valued differently than something that costs.
Yeah, I say,
You know, you can blow off something that's free, like, we didn't, you know, but if it's $5 or $10, we can always give it back, which would be my plan, is to have somebody pay $5 or $10 and then just kind of refund it at the end. So another group do that. At least it's getting you there. But I'm hoping that with enough financial support, we can get us out for free, because I think it's that important.
Okay, so you have this partnership with City on a Hill organization, and you're doing these camps more frequently. You talked about the idea of a pipeline.
Yeah.
What's the vision for that pipeline to college or trades or companies, or what's the idea there?
Yeah, ultimately to companies.
Okay.
And so I look at this as professional development.
Mm-hmm.
So we're giving these kids this, you know, lean early. And so it allows companies to act almost as they're, you know, a sports league, and they can say, this eighth or ninth grader, they got it. They really took to this. We're a mature lean company. Let's develop this person through high school and maybe even through college. And they're in our pipeline now to get it to our company. So now we're growing leadership.
You're thinking to have companies actually try to work or maybe observe or learn about these kids before they're even in college, or
yes, okay, absolutely.
Oh,
that's because now you're growing them early, and now you have a pipeline. And you know, some of them will maybe drop out and go do something else.
Uh-huh.
And that's, you know, the great thing about lean is that they can do anything with lean and go any industry, any career,
right?
But you're able to then, now we don't have to like try to squeeze people into these roles that maybe it shouldn't be there. Now you have a farm system almost, where you're developing kids, getting them through college, you know, and then getting them there. And so it would save a lot on recruitment and all that kind of stuff to do that. So that's kind of my vision. We won't do a draft, but you know, or maybe, I don't know, but you know, that's really the vision of now we're identifying these kids early to get them in there. So.
And what's been the response from the kids in this new program? That's you just described the 3 hours, and they participate for 20 to 25.
It's been good, because we really gamify it, And that's the biggest thing. And you have to do that with adult student to a certain degree, but you know, we teach the concept and then we play a game. Teach the concept, watch a video, play a game, you know, because it's all sorts of videos you can show, you know, all sorts of games. And it all you can still focus on eliminating waste or process mapping. You know, all those things are still within those games or those videos. So there it's just reinforcing. And as a college professor, what I learned is that, you know, people learn in different ways. So I like to give people the learning in three ways. You know, I kind of the lecture piece, a video, and a hands-on activity. And that way, one of those ways they're going to get it. And so I figured that if I throw out that variety, then that helps us to really see, okay, we've given us three ways, which kids are really catching on to this, and we're able to identify those kind of high potential kids.
Have you seen, well, I guess how long have you been doing it now in this method?
This is year five of the
Year
camp.
five.
Yeah.
Okay. So have you had a chance to see like development or like a kid from year one or two carry these skills forward or?
Yeah, so that's one thing that we want to do. We still are in touch with Alexina, who's a young lady in the Philippines, and
Okay.
so we can go back because we have all the contact information of the parents of those kids. We can still go back and check in and see how they're doing and that sort of thing. So yeah, that's a goal too, to kind of just do some, you know, to go back and see how they've developed, how they, you know, how they're progressing in school and that sort of thing.
Nice.
Yeah.
What about for you? Has it taught you anything either about your own capabilities around problem solving or your method of instruction at university? I mean, you just talked about that a little bit.
Yeah, you know what? It's interesting. When I started teaching in college, I did what everybody else did,
Right.
which was lecture.
Lecture.
And what I realized is that that's not really the way kids learn anymore. Now, you know, they and it's not, and even face to face is not always the way they want to learn. And so now you have to be flexible because, like now, some and you know, college students, they want to learn face to face. Some of them want to be virtual because they don't want to. They have anxiety around that socialization.
They prefer virtual instruction versus the in-person instruction.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
And
interesting.
so what I've done is I found a mix. So what we call a hybrid class. So where we meet some in person and we meet some virtually, there's some self-paced learning built in. And so now, you know, it's given them a variety. So the kids who, after the pandemic, they're socially anxious, and I have a son that's like that. They're the ones that have the hoodies on with the headphones. They don't really want to socially interact with everybody, and they need their time away. It's like, okay, great. We're meeting in person. Now we're going to meet virtually and kind of mix it to kind of see how that works. So far, I think the students have appreciated the flexibility. So I have a lot of students that work full time, and their companies have sent them back to learn and leave so they can promote them.
Well, it's interesting, you know. I mean, LEI is guilty of it too. We used to host these workshops where, you know, you sit in a room for a day or two and lots of slides, and there's, you know, there are interactive activities along the way. So like, there's a lot of lecture involved as well. And with, I mean, the way technology works today, the way people consume media, the idea of sitting still and listening to a talking head for 2, 3, 4 hours, that may not be possible for a lot of people these days because the, I mean, there's just a lot of things stealing our attention and
Sure.
it's just a lot more interesting.
Hmm.
And so I don't know if you were to advise a company on how do you go about training like a new this new generation of people, what sort of lessons have you picked up on?
Yeah, I think, you know, think about how long TikTok is, right? It's so
I
short.
try to stay off TikTok because
Right.
I'm terrified of getting sucked into the
Yeah,
algorithm.
we may all be on
That's right. Yeah, clock's ticking on TikTok. Yeah.
absolutely. But we live in like it's like a sound bite. It's like pretty quick learning culture. So it's like, you know, there's a TikTok about which I talked about this in one of the conferences, the egg sandwich. I don't know if you've seen this. So basically,
Say what?
someone
like a make an egg and cheese sandwich.
Yeah, basically, yeah. And so what someone did is that what they did is they put the bread in the pan. Yeah. They kind of like cooked the egg around. Like they did it this way that was like so fast where like they didn't need a plate. They didn't need, you know, and it was just like very quick how they did it. Like they put the egg in, then they put the bread on top of it. Then they ended up like flipping it over and it was done. And they flipped it out. They ate it out of the pan. And that was it. So I use that as an example of, see, this person's a child. And they figured out a way to take waste out of a process. They didn't call it that, but that's basically what they were doing.
Yeah.
And so when I saw that, and that kind of, you know, stuck in my mind, I was like, wow, that's interesting. I was like, you know, and they're not even trained on anything, but they're already thinking about, man, how can I do this faster? So I don't have to wash extra dishes. I can make the sandwich really quick. The bread's already here. Like those are all the elements of what we do.
Well, there probably are a lot of good examples of that. Mm-hmm. Not even on TikTok. The person responsible for like LEI social media stuff, I should probably be on TikTok. The mining memes is great.
Hey, that's for the cut.
Me.
Yeah, right.
I'm guilty of it too. I sucked into Twitter world for a couple of years. Yeah. Thank God I'm out of that. Yeah. Well, it is interesting to think about, you know, companies do need to adapt to how things are changing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Who knows what's going to happen? Yeah. AI and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, do you see any of that influence yet and how kids are learning or anything? ChatGPT.
Yeah, I think, you know, in college, we're so guarding against, like, you know, turning in assignments based on AI.
Does the college embrace it or do they try to battle it?
I think they try to battle it, but I actually, what I did for the first time in the fall was I built it into an assignment. So we had a supplier quality manual was the assignment they had to build. And I said, build your quality manual based on, you know, these elements and then use AI to build it and compare it to.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. And so some were able to do it, some weren't. And so it's really about how do you question AI? What questions do you ask? What's the specific you put in the your ask? This is what you get back. And so we talk about that, but also we talk about how, you know, problem solving is still needed. And so what I want the students to know is how to use AI to help them, even though they're still going to have to, you know, problem solve. Like there's this video about Dark Factory. It's a factory in China where they had the lights on, I think maybe 3 hours a day.
Uh-huh.
I think they have like maybe 4 or 5 employees, everything else is robots.
And what do they make?
They make all kinds of stuff. I think they were doing like
a ton of warehouse.
They actually
make stuff.
Yeah, they make stuff.
Huh.
And so the only time people go in there is when they just go to check to make sure everything's good. Is anything going wrong? They fix it. You know, problem solvers. Ooh. Those are all the employees, and they don't even need lights because they all they have robots.
Got it.
And so I don't know how soon we're going to get there. I think we're just trying to discover the full extent of AI and how it's going to. That's going to impact careers. But I think if you're a problem solver,
yeah,
I think you're able to distinguish yourself from everybody else. So if you have a repetitive job that doesn't require any kind of critical thinking, those are the jobs that AI is coming for. And they're always going to need somebody to step in to make sure that our customer specs being met are the machines running as the way they should.
Mm-hmm.
There's always going to be some people that need to do that and even solve future problems.
Well, my experience with ChatGPT, and I don't know if I'm proud or embarrassed to say that, I use it all the time.
Yeah, sure.
And what's you do too.
Mm-hmm. All right.
And I think I found it to be almost a partner in problem solving.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know anything about programming. I can't write code, but this thing can write code.
Sure.
And together we've managed to automate some difficult, time-consuming tasks that,
mm-hmm.
you know, were not much fun to do when took a lot of resources, but how to get them done.
Sure.
And I was just amazed. It wasn't me just telling the thing, please do this, because it needs a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes I was helping it solve problems and it was helping me solve problems.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there could be a split where eventually the technology will become so powerful that it will be able to solve many challenging problems independent of a person.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there will be, I hope there's always opportunity
mm-hmm.
for the person to use the tool solve problems they never would have been able to solve on their own.
Right.
But
right.
what I, with your camp, what could be kind of interesting is, I mean, you're fostering the thinking, the creativity
mm-hmm.
for the latter, you know, to get them thinking about how to do problem solving.
Yeah.
And then this tool, they can bolt on to their brains. So they're kind of have problem solving superpowers, but, sure. you know, powered by,
mm-hmm.
you know, their thinking versus handing over their thinking to the machine.
Right.
And so, I don't know, it sounds like you're probably setting them up to be able to really thrive in this kind of crazy world that we're about to enter here.
Yeah, and I've given some thought to how I want to incorporate AI into the camps.
Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it was my first dive into it and incorporating into an actual class. You know, like I said, a lot of people are fighting against it, but I'm like, it's going to be here. So
or some teachers are really just still, they're trying to fight the battle. They're on the front line. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, even back when we were teaching virtually, I mean, there were teachers who, you know, like, I'm used to face-to-face. I'm not comfortable teaching virtual. I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
And it's important. And I do it in particular because I make my students present virtually. Because depending on the company you work for,
you may have a lot of it.
And so I make them do that just so that they can try to read the room and all those things that you could typically do in person.
Huh.
You know, now it's like, how do I do that virtually? And so I can give them a feedback on how they sounded, you know, were their slides okay, like how the presentation came across. Because, mm-hmm. I, you know, for me, I'm just trying to prepare them for the future.
Yeah.
And I want them to have, you know, careers where they're valuable at every stop that they go.
Yeah.
I don't want them to be limited by not knowing something. And so why not do that really early?
Yeah.
And so I feel like problem solving it's almost like a switch that you flip in your brain.
Mm.
And then once you start doing it, now you start looking at things differently.
Hmm.
It's almost like, you know, the red pill, blue pill, you know, from the Matrix, right? It's like, once you do that, it's like, okay, now I don't see a line at the market. I see opportunity, you know, to redesign this process.
Yes.
You know, I don't just go to Chick-fil-A anymore. I actually understand why somebody's coming to my car, how they're keeping the flow going. You know, like
Chick-fil-A is impressive with how they manage that.
They are. I usually do a comparison with Popeyes.
Chick-fil-A is definitely winning.
Oh,
on that front, I do think the Popeyes product is better than Chick-fil-A.
I completely agree. the process is not. Nor is the customer service. But that's a whole other story.
But if people did want to support the camp, mm-hmm. is there a way for them to do that?
They can contact me directly through MATC.
Okay.
I'll certainly do that. And then I'm going to establish a website shortly, but, you know, through working with City on a Hill, but they can certainly look up City on a Hill, Milwaukee, and they can go through there as well.
Okay. Well, we'll put some of that information in the show notes, yeah. And if people are interested, they'll have a chance to contribute.
Or on LinkedIn, certainly reach me there as well.
Say it. Perfect. Well, Alan, I just want to say thanks for joining me here on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This has been wonderful.
I'd like to thank Alan for joining me here on the podcast. If you'd like to support his work, you can check out the link to City on a Hill in the show notes. And thanks to you all for listening. Until next time.